The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, right now, on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle, live in studio, waiting to take your calls on anything you'd like to talk about your health. Perhaps you've had a problem. You've tried, you've applied, you've done all the things you can think of and come up with, you know, nothing that works, right? 888-630-9625. 888-630-9625. That's how you find us here today. Have a very interesting program, a different program, something that you wouldn't expect to find on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, but we're always here to surprise and exceed your expectations. In studio, we're going to be talking about spinal surgeries, and we're going to talk about brain surgery, and we're going to talk about, you know, who's the best candidate. You know, is it something that you should run off to just because you have chronic pain? And you're saying, yeah, but doc, you don't do surgery. But in studio, in-house, a very good friend and somebody who I admire, and also is one of the top neurosurgeons in the Washington metropolitan area. Welcome, Dr. Sid Shandella.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rozelle, for having me on the show. I'm very excited.
Oh, it's fun. It's going to be a fun situation. And also the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning.
Good morning, guys. Hey. Always fun to be here with you.
Hey, Harlan, this is going to be fun. So we're going to talk about, you know, the different ramifications, the different indications, what happens if and when, what are the failure rates, that sort of situation. And we're going to see what we can do to put this all together because, Sid, I know that, you know, your group, treats the Redskins, and, you know, our office does as well. Over the years, we've had the opportunity to treat many athletes, and then we see them from concussive problems to ruptured discs, even going back to the days of Joe Montana when he threw that cross-field pass and ruptured his L5 disc and just tore the annulus out. So we see these kind of things on an ongoing basis, and, you know, it comes down to, can they be fixed? Are they a surgical case? You know, and if so, what's the potential outcome? So we're going to get into that quite in depth, but our number here is 888-630-9625. So, interesting program, as I said, but, I'm sitting here humbled by these two guys because, you know, between them, they have more knowledge, more capacity, more ability to really turn things, into an understandable format. And that's what we do here on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. You know, let's get into the meat of it a little bit, Sid, and talk about what are the, you know, you split your time half between brain surgery and spinal surgery. And we're going to start, we're going to go easier. We're going to talk about the spine, and then we'll get into the brain and concussive problems. And because of, you know, so much of that out there with our children as well as professional athletes today. But guy walks into you and they're dealing with chronic pain. And, you know, you got typical radiation someplace, whether it's the arms, the hands, the shoulders, numbness in the hands, loss of motor function, you know, it can be in the legs. And the guy's walking around and can't stand on his legs anymore. Walk us through a typical, you know, we refer to you all the time. So walk us through how you evaluate that spinal case and make a decision. Is it all based on x-rays and the MRIs, or are there other indications? How do you decide that that's a surgical case and it's got to be done now?
Very good question, Tom. Let's break it down as a spine, as we know, is a cervical portion, thoracic portion, and lumbar portion. And really, one of the most common days that people take off from work is really for back pain. And so let's talk about back pain and lumbar spine issues. To allude to what you said, somebody walks in with some chronic pain and some pain going down the leg, not able to walk. First, got to see how the patient is, the age, there any other comorbidities, hypertension, diabetes, do they smoke, what's their BMI, are they in shape, are they slightly overweight? So you take that into account, then you take into how long is the pain been happening? Why is the pain happening? What movements cause the pain? Does walking cause the pain? Does sitting down relieve the pain? So you want to ask about exacerbating and relieving factors. And then also the intensity. Does it prevent them from doing the things that they want to do in life? How much of a hindrance to quality of life or work is the pain? And what have they done for that pain thus far before they walked into my office? Have they been on chronic medications? What kind of medications? Narcotics? Do they have any benefits? Do they have any ill effects from being on the medications? And then ultimately, is there a neurological problem? Is there weakness? Is there atrophy? Well, one of the muscles in the legs are smaller than the other leg. Is there an issue with going to the bathroom? So any of those, we have to look for any red flags for neurological problems.
So what you're saying is that it's not as easy as taking a look at an MRI and seeing a protruded disc, or one that even if the disc is slightly outside its normal container, the annulus, that's not necessarily a surgical indicator.
So I could almost guarantee you, if you, Tom, Harlan, and myself undergo an MRI of the lumbar spine, we will have something. Some bulges, some degenerative changes. It's the price for living. You know, this is wear and tear process. So luckily and fortunately, we're not having symptoms. So anybody walking down the street gets scanned will have some findings on the MRI scan. It's just our job as clinicians to figure out if that particular finding is causing the patient's hindrance or problem in quality of life, neurological problems, pain, and so on and so forth.
I'm going to give you guys a toss-up question. Harlan, you and I see chronic pain patterns all the time. People come in, and as Dr. Sid just said, that they have degenerative all kinds of stuff. God forbid anybody takes a look at my spine after multiple accidents and injuries and martial arts and all those things. It's not pretty. And, people have lost height because the disc spaces shrink. But here's the question. You see people in a lot of pain. So you're working on them and so forth. And I know that as I do, we refer to Dr. Sid. What would you send to him at that point? You say, I need to take another look at this thing. There's something's not right at that level.
Certainly what Dr. Shandella said, when we start to see neurological deficits and what we call impairment, another person has weakness in the extensors of their foot, or the person is, not responsive to care, certainly that's a situation that would be a referral. Most of the time when I refer to him, it's when the symptoms are distal from the back. There's some sort of sensational problem in the foot. Maybe they don't feel it as well as on the right versus the left. And certainly if there's a pain pattern in the leg or in the arm. But I think the big one is when there's no progression in care after a certain amount of time. Because, when it comes to weakness in muscles, you have a limited amount of time that nerve can stay under compression and the muscle recover from.
It's an interesting process, because over 40 years of practice, I'm sitting here, thinking about the cases that I've seen and the people that come in such horrific disability. And in many cases, some of those things are easy to turn around. But in some situations, patients come in and you think that they're easy and they just never respond. How do you rationalize that, Dr. Sid?
Well, one way to really divide that is if anybody notices to have a profound weakness to whatever degree, minor weakness, major weakness, loss of muscle mass. So that's a little bit of a different ball game, because now whatever findings are in the MRI is actually causing a neurological issue in addition to the pain and the disability. So I think that needs to be addressed rather quickly, to identify the inciting factors causing the weakness and to see if it needs any kind of surgical attention. Oftentimes, it doesn't, but it needs to be evaluated to see if that weakness is profound enough and can it get better with non-surgical methods. So for somebody with chronic pain, they really have to demonstrate failure of multiple things. And I often tell patients, I really draw it on a diagram and tell them there's a surgical bucket and there's a non-surgical bucket. So one has to demonstrate they are motivated and they've tried every avenue possible, from alternative medicine, physical therapy, chiropractic, acupuncture, you name it, whatever it is, and they still come back and their quality is poor, they're unhappy in their life because of that, and the MRI demonstrates that there is a lesion or some sort of a compression on the nerve from whatever reason, for, you know, facet disease, disc herniations or whatever, then we talk about surgery.
Let me ask you a question. Out of all the folks that walk into your office, and let's not put into that the acute situation, person's in an automobile accident and they're in a significant trauma place, what percentage of the people do you think you actually end up doing surgery on after a consult, that is?
That's a good question. Barring any acute stuff like you said or any acute neurological problems, if we're talking degenerative pain, probably in the neighborhood of 5 to 7%. So every maybe, you know, and I'm talking 100 patients walk in and we're operating, you know, I'm operating on maybe 5-6 people.
So
after they've
number.
Demonstrated failure of other treatments. Surgery is not the number one treatment for pain. Is not the primary treatment for pain.
You know, and so many people are being sent out, and historically you see people getting into offices, unfortunately, that don't have your perception of that same situation. You know, we sit here and we see failed back surgeries all the time. People walk in and they're at continuing pain. It didn't do anything for them, or minimally, you know, it may have gotten a little bit better, but then over a period of time, the problem gets progressively worse. So here's the question, stacking on what Harlan had to say, is that patient has surgery. Out of that 5 to 7 that you do surgery on, 5 years down the road, how many are stable?
Yeah, so again, in spine surgery, especially lumbar spine surgery, it's about indications and patient selection. So we all try in the healthcare field try to select out and do the best for the patient. And of course, the things that are out of our control is the patient and the factors that they bring to the table. Their healing, their body habitus, their other comorbidities that can play a factor in what we call failure of treatment. But I think, generally speaking, you know, everybody wants to have a good outcome and do the best for the patient. So I think a good outcome would be if the patients are off some of the medications or have decreased their medication significantly, they're having a quality of life, and really depends on the age, the body habits of the patient, to see if a spinal fusion breaks down number of years. It is known that a certain percentage of people will break down at the adjacent level because, frankly, the spine is not meant to be fused. We have, as you know, inter-segment mobility between the disc. Each vertebral segment has to have mobility. By spinal fusion, we're eliminating that mobility. So down the years, you will have biomechanical stresses.
And so the motion that we lose at one segment now has to be taken up someplace, and it goes to either the segment above or the segment below. Now you have hyper exacerbations at those levels and degeneration that occurs just because of that abnormal function. In studio, Dr. Sid Shendella, neurosurgeon and somebody who we respect tremendously, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about spine and pain. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We're in studio. Call 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Love to talk to you on any subject. We have a very interesting subject and almost a panel discussion here. What am I talking about? Dr. Harlan Browning, you know him as the professor at the Rozelle Center for Healing. But we have a very special guest today, Dr. Sid Shendella. He is a neurosurgeon. What in God's name do I have a neurosurgeon on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live doing? Well, he's one of the top guys in the area of Virginia neurosurgeons. And Dr. Sid is somebody that we refer to, and we have a tremendous amount of respect for him, because guess what? He just doesn't jump in and start cutting. He splits his time between spinal surgery and brain surgery, which is we're going to get into a little bit on why and the so forth and so on. It's about that in the second half of the program. But right now, again, welcome, Dr. Sid. You do a lot of work with the Washington Redskins, as our office does, and not to position that in any other way except for when an athlete like these tremendously intense, very conditioned guys get smacked around, it's like a car accident happening every time. How often are those injuries ultimately going to manifest themselves into something that you're going to have to put your hands on at some point?
Well, first of all, these athletes are very, you know, highly conditioned, superior physical specimen, and young, and so they really auto protect themselves with these collisions that they encounter every day during work. And what happens is after the end of sport, as the athlete ages, you do have repercussions of their youth. Not only spine, you know, orthopedic injuries and things, and causing osteoarthritis and just wear and tear on the body. So a lot of these athletes do manifest a lot of breakdown from their career.
You know, it's amazing to me because we've seen so many of these athletes in our office over pretty years. You know, Dr. Harlan, same, you know, your perspective of these types of things. How many of these guys do you treat and we're keeping them, you know, we're putting band-aids on them, you know, to try to keep them so they can play? Ultimately, how do you see that manifesting ultimately, having to said, you know, send them out to Dr. Sid or somebody like that that has to do spinal surgery on them?
Well, you know, certainly you see a lot of the trauma induced, but, you know, I think you see a lot more overuse injuries. So, in other words, going through the progression of whatever the sport, you're using those joints over and over again, and then you're going to get the repercussions, which can be a chronic tendonitis or bursitis, you know, unresolved problems. So, you know, there's a little bit of both, but, you know, in some situations, when a joint's unstable or the person's performance is dropped, you know, below acceptable level, then, you know, all avenues need to be, you know, analyzed.
Well, we get into the next half of the program. I want to talk a little bit more about that, but on the concussive side, and these guys, as I said, are basically experiencing a car accident every time they get hit out on that field, and their brains are being bounced against the cranial wall, you know, just like a racquetball in a court, and ultimately produces injury that is something that is unavoidable or leading into other degenerative states, even Parkinsonian type of conditions. So we'll wait and we'll touch that. But right now, 888-630-9625. This is your opportunity. If you have been told that you need spinal surgery or should have spinal surgery, this is an opportunity to talk to, in our opinion, one of the best in the Washington metropolitan area. Not only is Dr. Sid Chandela excellent at what he does, but he's also extremely conservative, and he's not a surgeon that's going to say, you know, I think we need to cut today, and you end up with that everlasting devastation called surgery that may manifest itself into a chronic problem that you didn't have before you walked in. And so we need to do it. Dr. Sid, we got about a minute, and I want to follow up on a conversation that we started before. With patients who undergo surgery, and I'm not talking about your office, but you see failed surgeries, at that point, are they reversible, or at this point, are we looking at just trying to maintain a patient so they can have some quality care?
Well, in that situation, it's individualized to the patient. And I would say some of the people have some improvement or benefit, but not complete reversible. And some people are just about maintaining that condition and trying to help them along.
You know, it's unfortunate. We see so many of that. We see people come in multi-segment fusions, you know, and they're cut from one end to the other. You know, and I don't know if you know the history, and I'll talk about this real fast. One of the reasons that I got into what I do, my wife had migraine headaches from the time she was about 5 years old. They got so bad by the time she was in her early 20s, and she was losing a day to two of the week, and they were sure that it was a dural problem. And this is going back, obviously, years ago, but fix to this that they wanted to fuse her entire neck. And we'll talk about that when we get back. So love to have your comment on that. We're coming up to the break. my guest, Dr. Sid Shandella, Dr. Harlan Browning. Don't go away.
Dr. Tom Rozell Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. Indeed, we're in studio. 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Different show today. We have that great personality that most of you know, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor, and, you know, his expertise is unstoppable, and I feel humbled anytime that I'm with him, and not all the time, but sometimes, once in a while. I have to give him the benefit of that. But more importantly, we have a very special guest in studio, Dr. Sid Shandella, a neurosurgeon in the Washington area, someone that we respect because we refer to him when we're like, oh, my God, I guess we have to do something other than what we're doing. But those of you who have been listening to the first half of the show, you're getting the idea that surgery is not necessarily something that you jump at, something that you want to experience unless it's absolutely the last case situation. Our phone lines are lighting up, and I want to be respectful, so we're going to start taking some of your calls and then get back into it. We talked about spinal surgery and spinal problems in the first half of the show. We're going to talk a little bit about concussive problems. Dr. Sid passes his time between spinal surgery and brain surgery, and we are very flattered and we are very fortunate to have him among our go-to people when it comes to this type of problematic situation. Ina, you've been waiting a long time. How can we help you?
Hi. I missed the part where you were talking about the facet disease. What can be done for it?
Facets? Okay. So facet disease or facet arthrosis, which is degeneration and spinal irritation over a long period of time, and it's usually a result of injury coupled by inflammatory response that has not been rectified. It's usually structural, it's mechanical to begin with, and coupled with biochemical inflammation. Dr. Sid, if somebody came in with facet arthrosis and irritation, how would you handle that situation?
Well, I would first examine the patient, see if the pain is going down the leg, when the pain happens. But really, you want to make sure that the patient has tried everything for the facets, whether physical therapy, massage, chiropractic, acupuncture, because it's a degenerative process, like you already explained. It's biochemical, it's mechanical, it's degenerative, and also how bad the pain is. I mean, how debilitating is the situation?
Dr. Harlan, you and I both see a lot of facet problems, and that, if we had to line them up, is probably a huge percentage of the type of spinal pain that we normally see. So how do you approach that problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a heavy hitter, and I would also say that for folks that have disc issues that are not trauma-induced, I can assure you that the ball got rolling because of bad mechanics, and that begins with the facets not moving. So the spine has points of pivot, and one of those being these facets and the joints in the back part of the vertebrae. When those become degenerated, then what we call the instantaneous axis of rotation, where we actually get the motion, shifts forward onto the disc, which accelerates the disc degeneration and all of the cascade that's involved, the hypertrophy or the thickening of the ligaments and the degenerative changes to the joint surfaces and all those things. So facets are the bread and butter of what we do as chiropractors as far as rehabilitating people.
What people have to understand, that the majority of spinal pain that we see, there may be underlying disc bulging and protrusion and so forth, but as Dr. Sid said in the first half of the program, that ain't necessarily what's causing the problem. And when we're dealing with the facets being out of position mechanically over a long period of time, you're going to get this inflammatory cascade, if you will, in erosion called arthritis. And now we have a compounded situation. But to turn that around, you have to change not only the mechanics, you got to change the biochemistry as well. Rob, how can we help you? Thank you for being patient with us.
You're quite welcome. Thank you. I wanted to ask Dr. Sid about his opinion of the newer so-called flexible spinal fusions.
Hey, Rob, thank you. Rob, thank you for the question. There's a whole industry in spine surgery of vendors of all sorts of instrumentation that we can place in the spine to really mimic a natural spine, which is supposed to have motion. And so It all depends really on somebody's MRI scan, body habitus, of what equipment can be placed in somebody's spine. There's disc arthroplasty, which is essentially an artificial disc to preserve the motion in the neck and to avoid adjacent level problems, because like we had mentioned early in the show, when you fuse a spine is not meant to be fused because it's independent mobile segments, it will have a biomechanical effect on the adjacent levels. So as a science, as spinal surgery, as medical science, we're trying to develop ways where we can decompress the spine, stabilize the spine, and relatively preserve the natural motion so it does not have deleterious effects at the normal or the adjacent levels. So I think in a person, there are very specific indications for these kind of flexible, hardware. I think there's a lot of research being done and a lot more products are coming down the pike. But again, this is all past everything after one has demonstrated refractory to conservative treatment.
So this, Dr. Sid, just to jump in a little bit on this, this is a situation where even though that all of these devices and these mechanical instrumentations are available to you, it's still not a primary go-to until other things have been done first. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. And one, in a sort of a better term, I always tell patients, the body has an incredible way of healing. No matter what is ailing you, including spine, including facet disease, a disc problem. So really everybody goes through a period of healing, auto healing, and then comes physical therapy, chiropractic to augment, to change the patient's lifestyle, to help them understand their biomechanics, to see if that can help them with the pain. And if all that fails, and there's a true compression on the spine that requires surgical decompression, that's when we come in.
You know, it's amazing. I sit and I watch YouTube videos on a lot of these things because I want to keep up to date. And I get into the literature and, you know, I'm referred to or, you know, some site. And, you know, particularly when it comes to the neck and you're putting the artificial disc spaces in, I mean, you're having to, at that point, dig into the body of the vertebrae that's there, and then you're putting this artificial disc in place, and then you're separating, giving it some height. That's what we were talking about earlier on spinal stenosis. When you deal with a patient who has a stenotic compression due to, let's make it simple, just loss of disc height and scar tissue, is that type of thing, is that your, would that be the go-to treatment, or again, would you do other things before you tried that as an intervention?
Unless there is a profound neurological problem, I always will do other things first. And the patient has to try them, and I think they will get benefit. It'll be short term. Maybe they repeat the cycle again. And if it's a recurrent problem and really having an impact on quality of life, that's when we, you know, recommend and indicate for surgery.
Rob, appreciate your phone call. Thank you. Tom, thank you for holding. How can we help you, sir?
Hi, doctors. Good morning or good afternoon. I you may have already covered mine, but I'll give you a real quick summary. I had stenosis about the L4 region. I had an MRI that showed that in the canal, the bone and tissue, I guess, was growing into it, age, arthritis. I had the surgery done, and then the neurosurgeon did a fantastic job of relieving all the symptoms. I had pain, numbness in the leg on the right side. It's starting on the left side now. It's not nearly as bad. But as I'm listening to the doctor talk about it, it sounds like there are additional things that can be done. Right now he's got me on ibuprofen to relieve the pain, and that is helping. But believe it or not, I think what may have kicked it off is I went into PT, and I'm thinking that, I don't know, I could be wrong about that, but I'd just like to get the doctor's opinion.
Harlan, what do you think? And then Sid.
You know, anytime you're doing some sort of rehabilitative process, and I'm not putting that exclusively in the camp of physical therapy, I'm talking about whatever modality you use, I think you need to look at what the person tolerates the best. So in spinal rehab, there's two major camps. One that like to do things into flexion, and another group that like to do things into extension. And very often those two groups failed to cross over. So all, if you're an extension guy, what's called McKenzie technique, you're going to do everything in extension, regardless if the person has a positive outcome or even, you know, has any complaints, and vice versa for the flexion. So I find when I see people who've been through therapy and they fail, it's almost always because they've been pushed through this one thought process and they didn't tolerate it well, and then they drop out of care. So you need to see what the person's you know, ability is to adapt to different motions.
I agree with you, Harlan. I think physical therapy or any modality can exacerbate a condition or start a new condition. And, you know, what I recommend at that point, you take the analgesics, take some time off, and try something else.
Now, here's a situation, Tom, and you need to be aware of long-term use of any kind of ibuprofen. It's called an NSAID, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. It's the same as Aspirin or anything like that, or Advil or Motrin, just to give you some brand names. Now, here's the problem with long-term use. There's some cardiac problems because it steals coenzyme Q10 or CoQ10 from the mitochondria of all tissues, including the brain and the heart. But it also, substitutes, if you will, or competes for the receptor sites within the disc material for the sulfate ion, which allows the disc to repair itself. So over a long period of time, does it act as an anti-inflammatory? Yes. Does it help the pain threshold? In the initial phases, it does, but long-term use of it can actually increase degenerative changes within the disc space. And the literature is very supportive of that. So you have to do something else long term. We have patients that come in and they've been on, you know, any of these drugs, including Celebrex for years, and they have other problems as a result of that. And so anytime you're competing for receptor sites in any tissue, any area of your body, something's got to give and you have a problem. Tom, appreciate your phone call. Dr. Sid, you know, I just touched upon, you know, some of the side effects that we see and we know nutritionally to be true. How does that manifest itself? When a patient comes in, they've been on medications, they've been on Celebrex, they've been on any of these things for some cases, years. Does it make your life much more difficult when you go to surgery?
Absolutely. So Celebrex and the NSAID that you mentioned certainly have a bleeding complication where they can increase your bleeding time. So if somebody is being considered for surgery, we often tell them to stop taking these medications at least for a week. Then we do the surgery. There's a period of time after surgery that they have to be off these medications to reduce bleeding complications. But then, like you said, people have been relying on these medications for all these years for pain, and they almost have this rebound pain because they need to have this medication. So it takes a while, and this is only NSAID, but then there's another arm of the narcotic medication. We really have to work hard and talk to the patient and counsel them that once they've had surgery, that the goal, one of the initial goals of surgery, is also to wean off a lot of these medications. And you have to think of spine as spine health. Like, it's like when you go to the gym regularly, do you cardio regularly? So similarly, somebody has a spinal condition, it has to become a part of your life to treat it in that way. You know, stretch, exercise, and watch your biomechanics.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you bring that up, because and it's very refreshing to hear a surgeon bring that up, because I have patients and I will, you know, work with them. We get them to a place of resolution of their complaint. The pain's gone. And I just basically tell them that these are the exercises you're going to need to do forever. And I usually get a deer in headlight look at me or disbelief. And I just, you know, I'm just very honest. I'm like, it's no different than a person who loses weight. You can't go back to the diet that you did before. You need to have a new regimen.
Believe me, I would love to have somebody come in my office and I'll have 100%, you know, satisfactory rate from any kind of surgery, a single bullet theory. But oftentimes it is not that. Okay. It's surgery is one of the tools to treat refractory spinal pain condition that has to be augmented with routine spine care.
You know, we all have patients that come in and they're looking for that magic bullet. And unfortunately, they don't want to take responsibility. We're all like that. We never want to be wrong about our lifestyles. But when you look at today's lifestyle and the things that we do, the foods that we consume, everything from the alteration of GMOs and the non-organic foods with all the pesticides and the free-floating xenoestrogenics in our foods and so forth, they have an impact. They have a profound effect in the body. They alter your outcome and course, as well as the things that, you know, that we do in our office. Let's go to Mingo. Thank you for being patient. We got about a minute. How can we help you?
This is a wonderful program, and you probably have answered every question. I just started listening to you all about 30 minutes ago. But having a severe accident at work and having back surgery, I wanted to get off the medications. I wanted to ask you all, how do you feel about holistic medicines, THC? I don't want to smoke marijuana, but I need some relief. And what foods, once again, you may have answered the question, but what foods and holistic processes can I take to...
Okay, let me see what I can do to jump in for you. I may hold the part of it over, but... THC is not going to be the place that you need to go first. What you want to do to begin with is you want to look at spinal manipulation, you want to look at acupuncture, you want to look at low energy light laser, you want to look at conservative spinal decompression, that when we're not talking surgery here and the effects, you can resolve chronic pain, providing that you're willing to change some biochemistry, to do the things that you need to do, strengthen the body, and those things make huge differences. We would do all those things with you before we sent you to our friend Dr. Sid. We're coming up to a break. You're listening to Dr. Tom Result Live, a very, very special show. Don't go away.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You've been listening to Dr. Tom Rozell live, as you do every Sunday, 12 noon on the Eastern Seaboard. Those of you on the West Coast listening, you do the math. 3 hours earlier, and Armed Forces Radio as well. Thank you very much, guys. We appreciate your service. Very special edition today of Dr. Tom Rozell live. We have someone in studio with us that we respect, and we refer to Dr. Sid Shendella, neurosurgeon, and Dr. Sid is one of these guys that we trust because he doesn't jump to cut. As if you've been listening to the program today, you understand that there's so much more that you need to be doing before you even consider surgery, because there's so many problems at the end point if it's done too quickly. It's one of those things that it should be at the end of everything else that you've tried, from spinal manipulation to acupuncture to conservative decompression, I mean, with its manual decompression. We're not talking about surgery here, and nutritional changes. Remember, there's only three things that cause anything. One is injury to the body. Two is biochemical imbalances, things you eat you shouldn't be eating, things that you need more of, you don't get enough of. And the third is emotional stress. And when you combine all those things, the body reacts, and it reacts often by breaking things down. And when you put up with things and you're taking meds for a long period of time, you're just making life a whole lot worse than what it is. We have several of you still online, but I want to get into talking to Dr. Harlan Browning. That many of you know, he is our go-to smart guy in the office. We call him the professor simply because he has the capacity of really looking at things from a very different point of view. And it's my pleasure today to have both of these doctors in-house with me. Dr. Sid, we didn't get the opportunity to talk about concussion. So hopefully you'll come back and we'll do that at some point, and we can just talk about the brain and its impact and injury to the head and so forth.
I would love to, Tom. Thank you.
That would be fantastic. So let's kind of, you know, we've got a couple minutes and I want to wrap this up a little bit and get both of your opinions. Patient, we've already, you know, said that, you know, surgery is the last resort. Dr. Sid, when you ultimately get to that place, you said you cut on maybe 6 to 7 to 8% of the people that are referred to you for spinal surgery by, you know, any office. Let's talk about the outcome long term with even those surgeries.
Well, I'd like to think that my indication, or any surgeon who is doing this stuff, wants to have an optimal result. Number one, for the patient, you know, you want to have the satisfaction. Surgery, you know, it's a trauma to the body, right? You're physically, deliberately cutting into the body to achieve a goal. And so I take that with great seriousness, and I think so should the patient. So I counsel them accordingly, and it is a risk. There's a risk to driving in a car and getting in an accident, so there's always a risk. So I think, in, especially in spine surgery, I think it's that specific patient that I feel will have the optimal result after the surgeries, the ones that I indicate for surgery.
Harlan, we see post-surgical patients. And so when these people come in, and even when they've been, I'll use the term cut right, we still have a process of having to strengthen rehabilitation, because although if they don't change things, they got a problem later on. You know, what's your take on supporting that post-surgical piece?
You know, I think in any type of surgical situation, spine or, you know, extremity surgeries, there's a great importance of doing some sort of rehabilitation on the back end. Joint function is paramount. If we don't have normal joint function, then we don't have normal muscle function. So we need to do as much as we can to make sure that those joints are healthy. We want to reduce inflammation, change lifestyles, change ergonomics, you know, just a whole mindset.
Well, you heard it here. I mean, surgery is not the go-to. It is necessary for many people because you've tried everything else, but that's the keynote, is trying everything else. Unfortunately, we're coming up to the end of the program. This needs to be wait like 2 more hours. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Love you all. Bye.